Hey everyone, it's Nasia here on What's Up with the Owl's Nest. And who do I have today in studio? I have Miss Julie Mancini. She is the coordinator for the Hayes High House here at HCC. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to get this rolling.
Yes.
We have a good exhibit to talk about. I'm excited because I'm all about girl power in here.
Yeah, this is a girl power kind of exhibit.
Yes. So before we get into the exhibit, you are the coordinator for the Hayes High House. Can you tell us what you do?
Sure. So the Hayes High House is a public history site here on the campus. It's in an old house built in 1804, and it was the headquarters of a thoroughbred horse racing farm in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. So we hold exhibits now. We've turned it into a museum, and we have exhibits and events related to public history and culture, and I help to coordinate those. So sometimes I write panels for the exhibits, sometimes I get objects for the exhibits, and I try to get people to come see it.
Cool. So this exhibit is called Women on the Turf?
Yep, Women of the Turf. And it looks at the very many women in Maryland and beyond who are involved in equestrian sports. And that means horse racing, but it also means timber racing, show jumping, three-day eventing. There's all kinds of, you know, everything has its own terminology, and it's a big world. And Maryland is huge in the world of horses. I had no idea until we dug into this.
Right, me either. But we have a big history here on HCC's campus. And when I was going through my orientation, I was just like, wow, this is cool. I had no idea. I learned so much. The history is deep here in Harford County.
Yeah, so we had the Bel Air Racetrack was where the mall is now, and it was a successful track for a long time, and Havre de Grace had its own track as well, and a number of really prominent horses and jockeys raced at both of those, sort of on their way between Pimlico and Baltimore and some of the tracks up in New York. So, yeah, the history remains, and it's a very active and vital community still.
Cool. So there's a myth around our college campus that we have a horse buried here, a famous racehorse?
Yes, right? We do. As far as we know, Durbar 2 is buried somewhere near Hayes High House. Durbar 2 beat the Queen's horse in the Epsom Derby in England, and eventually the horse was brought to the U.S. to stand stud here on Prospect Hill Farm, which was the property that then became the college. So to honor this very successful horse, they buried it in the yard, but they buried it in the backyard, and we're not totally sure what they mean by backyard.
Mm-hmm.
We're not 100% sure where he is, but he's here somewhere.
He's here somewhere. That's cool. Yeah. So the exhibit, it focuses on female athletes in the equestrian sport, and is everyone in the exhibit local here to Maryland, or are there other athletes?
We do have many, many Marylanders that we focus on. That's the main focus. But in order to tell the sort of national story and show the national significance, we did focus on athletes that are in other locations as well. Plus, it's a circuit, right? So some of the women who trained here or rode here also rode in New York or in Florida or in California, and vice versa. The people move around a lot in this industry. So we wanted to make sure we were really catching everybody.
Got it. And when is the exhibit?
The exhibit runs, it's open now, and it will run through the end of December. And our open hours are Tuesdays 1 to 3, Thursdays 3 to 5, and Fridays 10 to 12. Although, if people can't make it during that time, I can always open it for special groups.
Mm-hmm. And is it free?
It's free. It's free, and there's a lot to see. We have six rooms. We have some historical riding clothing and some saddles and some other equipment. We also have gorgeous photographs from the photojournalists that are in the exhibit, and just a lot of really cool stuff.
Cool. So it's like a hall of fame, basically, for the equestrian women.
Yes.
Love it.
We have some, I wanted to mention some current emerging jockeys that we also have that are riding right now. We had to coordinate our meeting times around the races that they're in this summer, but they were able to loan us some of their objects as well.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So before the exhibit opened, there was a reception and you guys had awards and some other cool speakers and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. So this event is we do it every couple of years, and it's a fundraiser for the house to help us do programs like this. And we give out the Robert and Ann High Award for Excellence in Equestrian Journalism. And so that focuses on men and women who have written about horse racing, who take pictures. We've had a variety of different winners in the past. One was the broadcaster Jim McKay. We recognized him just last time. Before that, we actually recognized a cartoonist, Pierre Belloc, because he did a lot of cartoons related to the equestrian world. So he would do caricatures of people at the track and things like that. So that's the award. The award for Robert and Ann High is named that because they're the ones who owned the Prospect Hill Farm during the thoroughbred horse racing years when this was a headquarters for that. And Ann High was a woman of the turf herself. She was well known up and down the East Coast for her efforts in racing and in sort of publicizing how important racing was and what a great area this is for it. So.
And who was the speaker at the reception?
At the reception, we had Kathy Kussner, and she is she's great. She's done so many different things, but she was an Olympian. She was on the U.S. Olympic team, the equestrian Olympic team, in the very early years when they first started letting women compete on that team, and she won a silver medal. And she also. She first did a lot of riding doing steeplechase, which means you're jumping stuff with your horse, basically. But women were not at that time allowed to compete in regular races with men, the kind of races that people bet on at the tracks. They weren't allowed to have the licenses. So she actually sued the Maryland Racing Commission to get her license in the late 60s, kind of in the middle of the women's movement, mm-hmm. that second wave when lots of legal stuff was going on to get women the rights that they ought to have, especially women athletes. So this was part of the Civil Rights Act under which she was able to sue. And she did successfully get her jockey license, and women have been riding ever since.
Wow. So she is the pioneer. Like, without her, it wouldn't be women jockeys, huh?
Right, exactly. And she said that she had been hoping for years that someone else would do the lawsuit because she really didn't want to be that much in the public eye. She just wanted to ride her horses. But as nobody stepped forward, eventually she said it was just going to have to be her.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like this exhibit is really paying homage to some female athletes. Girl power.
Yay.
Y'all should really come out and see the exhibit. So other than Women on the Turf, what other exhibits and events does the Hayes High House put on?
So to go along with this particular exhibit, we do have some themed events. We're going to have a discussion of literature related to the horse world, right? Like, there's a whole thread of children's literature that's horse books. So Black Beauty and Black Stallion and National Velvet and all that kind of stuff. So we're going to have discussions about the books, what we like about them, what stuck out. We're also doing a couple of teas. Our teas tend to sell out. So you'll have to check our website and see if there's still availability for either of the teas. But we're expecting people will come in derby hats, the big hats that people wear to Pimlico.
Yes.
And the teas are usually really fun. We also have a couple historical lectures, one about the history of Pimlico, one about women's sportswear, the kind of clothes that women would wear to these races. And we also have, I'm really excited about this one, we have some digitized home movies from the 20s, 30s, and 40s of Ann High's. So it shows this property before it was the campus.
Wow.
So
it's so much history. That's awesome.
That's very cool.
And once this is over, well, I guess next year, because this is going to run until December, right?
Right.
Okay. So next year, are there any other exhibits that the Hayes High House is going to put on?
We do. We usually put up one exhibit a semester, so we will have one that opens in the spring, but it's under wraps right now.
Ooh,
so I can't tell you anything about it. But I will tell you, in the past, we've done exhibits on, we did a women's suffrage exhibit in this past spring.
I saw that. That was awesome.
That was a really fun mm-hmm. exhibit. We did one before that on the end of World War I. We did another before that one on, we called it Cultures and Disease, and it was actually looking at epidemics and their impact on culture and history, which sounds weird, but it was very interesting. The nursing students came out to come to programming and look at the exhibit, and so we've done a wide range of things at the house.
And can you tell us where on campus the Hayes High House is located?
Yes. So if you've ever been to the campus, you may have noticed a weird stone house just in the middle of campus and wondered, why is that here? That's Hayes High House, and you can come in there. It's got its open hours. You can, even if you're not interested in the exhibit, you can just tour the house and look at it. It's right by the library. So, you know, the library's got two entrances. One's a parking lot. If you go out the other one, the house would be right in front of you.
There's some theories that it's haunted. Is it real?
We have heard. We have certainly heard things about that. Some people really do feel a feeling in the house, right? And I may just not be attuned to it enough, but there's definitely people who are uncomfortable there. In certain spaces in the house, they feel like there's something going on. I've been in there all hours of the day and night, and old houses make weird noises. And I like to think it's just the house.
I just brought that up because with Halloween coming up soon, you know.
Oh, it's yeah. Funny. Oh, yeah. No, there are people who don't want to go in that house, I'll tell you. They really don't.
I went in there. It was cool. It was cool to me.
And the basement wasn't creepy, was it?
No, it wasn't creepy.
All right, good.
But I will say, when I went in there, the women's suffrage exhibit was up, and that was awesome. It was a sight to see. And wasn't there like some student artwork and stuff in there at that time?
Yes. We will try to incorporate some student work, either work that they did in a communications or a history class, or this time it was some art and some poetry by students related to civil rights and voting rights.
Mm-hmm. Are there any student works in this exhibit?
Not tied to the horse racing one. Although, like I said, we always try to incorporate a little bit of that.
Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about the Hayes High House?
That we love having people in there. And if they ever want to just pop in and walk around, or if they have an interest in museums or historic houses or public history even, I'm willing to talk to them about that kind of work and what it's like. We do have internships available, and so they can get in touch with me about that.
One thing that I remember from me going to the house was that on the outside it says something about we have a national something because of the Underground Railroad or something like that,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah.
So please expound on that.
I'll tell you about that. So we've got a couple designations. One is we're on the National Register of Historic Places. That's just because we're old. That happens. When you're an old building, you can apply for that. But we're also a site on the National Underground Railroad Network to Freedom, and that is because it's not that this was a stop on the Underground Railroad so much as this was a starting point on the Underground Railroad. So an enslaved person who lived at Hayes High House escaped to freedom from here, and so this was his starting point on his journey to freedom, and we've researched the records and traced his path, and that got us the designation. I think we were the first in Harford County to get one of those.
I love that. I love that history about HCC. It just makes me so proud to be a part of this university. It's just, that's so cool. I wanted everybody to know that because that touched me when I went to the house.
This college has a lot of great history. It's not the oldest school, but its location is an old, old location, and we've got a lot of cool history here.
That's awesome. Again, I have Miss Julie Mancini. She's the coordinator for the Hayes High House. She told us a lot of good things that the Hayes High House is doing for the university. And let's not forget about the exhibit, the Women on the Turf exhibit, Girl Power.
Yay.
It is talking about female athletes in the equestrian sport. And it is open until when?
December, the end of the semester. So
the end of
the
semester.
Holidays.
So you all have plenty of time to check it out.
Yeah.
I'm going to go myself.
Yeah, come on in.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
What's up at the Owl's Nest? Hey, I'm one of your hosts, Matt Terry, and thanks for coming in today. My guest is Andy Adams on the Owl's Nest. Andy is part of the biology department. He is assistant professor of biology, and he is the president of the Susquehannock Wildlife. Andy, thanks for coming in.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
Hey, man, we're happy to have you here. Tell me, what's going on in the biology department this semester?
Oh, ton of stuff. Usually yearly, we are looking to get as much student involvement as possible outside of the classroom. Of course, we offer a wide range of biology classes throughout the STEM division, along with our chemistry and physics and engineering courses as well. So, but really what the key is for a lot of STEM education is to get that experience outside the classroom as well. So we're always looking at ways to engage the students that way, and also to just enhance their overall college experience through scholarships and internship opportunities, so things like that.
You just mentioned scholarship opportunities, the HCC Gone Wild.
HCC Gone Wild is a grant that was approved through the HCC Foundation, and the overall goal is to, there's a couple goals, to enhance wildlife habitat on campus and around the campus. I'm not sure if you knew, but back behind the actual buildings on campus, we have many, many acres of forest and trails, field, a lot of wildlife habitat out there that people can go enjoy. We have a pond as well.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. So you can go on a walk back there anytime you want. There's lots of nice trails. But anyway, we're trying to enhance that habitat back on those trails and on the campus itself proper. And we were approved for funds to go ahead and do things like build bird boxes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, do some, even have a bee box, an apiary, where we can actually harvest honey, which is really exciting.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Honey's really good for you, too.
It is, yeah. I mean, you can't just get the store-bought honey stuff. You need to get it right from the source. I mean, who can deny a nice handful of bee puke on your bread?
Yeah, exactly. Right? I mean, now I'm maybe not so hungry for
it. It's delicious. But anyway, yeah, and then to enhance the trails in the woods on campus, too, we're going to have interpretive signage that people can read and learn about the local habitats we have here on campus as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and really the other goal here is, in order to do those things, we want to get the students involved, right? So we have a whole bunch of biology students who are interested in the environmental sciences and doing things outside. So they're going to be the ones to build the boxes, maintain the trails, make the signs, right, to get them engaged and give them experience in not just science and monitoring, but also in outreach and engagement with the public and a whole slew of other skills that they're going to find useful later on in their career.
Because that's what college is all about.
Absolutely.
Giving those students those real world opportunities.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
It might be a nice safe haven, you know, but we want to expose those students the way the world really works.
Right.
Now, as far as scholarships go, you said that there is the S-STEM scholarship. Tell me about that. How can students grab hold of that? Because that helps.
Right. So the S-STEM scholarship is something we offer each academic year, and any student can apply. And I think you have to have a GPA standing up above a 3.0 for that. But it's basically a program that you are assigned a mentor, and I am a mentor for a few of the STEM scholarship students, that helps to guide them through their academic careers a little better and to help them to be able to sort through their courses and what type of internships they should be getting and kind of help set them up for their careers in the future and what to kind of nail down a plan for them. And they do get financial help for that as well.
We need all the help we can get financially.
Sure.
College is not getting any cheaper.
Right, absolutely not.
But you said that you're the president of Susquehannock Wildlife.
Yes.
And that's such a great organization.
Thank you.
Too. And I mean, you guys do everything you can, you know, to educate the community about wild animals.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you never want to handle a wild animal. You never want to,
without proper training.
Not without proper training. Okay. What I should say is you never want to have one as a pet either.
Right, definitely. So, I mean, we at Susquehannock Wildlife, we have a multi-pronged approach to wildlife conservation here in the county, ranging from research to education to even wildlife rescue. And yeah, one of the major things that we stress is, and actually what we get calls about all the time is what should I do with this wildlife on my property? Should I pick it up? Should I move it? Can you guys do anything with it? And we're, the best advice is to just leave it alone. So yeah. Wildlife's supposed to be wild. Honestly, it moves on eventually. It doesn't like hanging out in your yard, you know?
not any more than it has to.
Right, exactly. So yeah, that's one of the things where we like to stress the hands-off part of wildlife interaction, unless intervention is needed if they're orphaned or injured, or of course we're doing our research project, which we are trained for and do have funding for.
Well, there's just so much good that you guys do there at the Susquehannock Wildlife. Mm-hmm. And are you at any events or anything like that coming up?
Yeah, we usually have a slew of environmental education events and fundraising events coming up. We actually just did a few weeks ago a creek snorkeling event, which is really fun, where we go in Deer Creek with a bunch of snorkels. And you would think that, you know, how exciting is a creek? And it's actually really amazing. A lot of fish diversity with turtles and other and invertebrates. And it's a really fun program we do every year. It's really popular. We also have kayaking trips that we do seasonally.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's a bring your own boat, BYOB.
wait a minute. Right. Bring your own boat.
Bring your own boat. Yeah. So if you have a kayak or a canoe, we don't have a fleet of boats yet, but we do guided tours of a lot of our waterways in Harford County, which are kind of some well-kept secrets.
Absolutely.
Especially around the coast and in the upper parts of the county. So we usually do a fall colors paddle in the northern Harford County. So when the leaves start changing, it creates a beautiful landscape to just have a nice leisurely paddle down one of our creeks. And we see all sorts of wildlife. We point everything out that we see, and we educate as best we can.
Well, that's all you can do, you know, is, right. is educate people as best you can.
Sure.
Now, speaking of education, you've had some student interns at Susque Wildlife, right?
We have. One of our more successful programs that we've adopted is an internship program, and we do that seasonally. We have mostly been doing it during the summer, but we're now going to be opening up to fall and spring as well. But what the interns do is they do help us with, we have a property up in northern Harford County in Darlington, pretty close to the Conowingo Dam.
Yeah.
That we are maintaining for the Department of Natural Resources. It's kind of our home base, but we're trying to enhance the wildlife habitat there and make it a place for education. So they help us with the maintenance there, watching nest boxes and maintaining trails and helping build our nature center, which is going to be there hopefully within the next year or so. But another thing that they do, and it really benefits the students, is they help out with our research projects.
Ooh.
Another part of what we do at Susquehannock is that we have a few species that we focus on that we try to learn more about in order to conserve them better. Right.
Sure.
So we have a few research projects that students have helped us on before. This past 2 years, we've been really busy. Last year, we actually wrapped up a study on copperheads, which is Harford County's only venomous snake that we have here. And we did a behavioral study on them because, of course, you say the word copperhead and everyone, you know,
out.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's they're terrifying, and people are scared of these things, and of course they're venomous, and you know we
sure.
want to give them respect.
Absolutely.
But what we wanted to do was to see if they really deserved that really terrible reputation that they get. So we wanted to test their defensive behavior, right? So, and I promise it's way more scientific of a process than this, but we basically poked them with sticks.
That might be one thing I might not volunteer for myself personally,
sure.
just to poke a copperhead. But quickly, tell me, is it true that baby copperheads are more venomous than an adult?
That's actually a huge myth.
Really?
They are venomous, right? They can bite and deliver venom.
Okay.
But it's a huge myth that goes around like, oh, they don't know how to control their venom and they inject it very, very quickly. And they inject the whole supply. And really, they're smaller snakes. They have a smaller supply, honestly, compared to an adult. So they're really not technically more venomous than an adult would be. They can still bite, but they're not any more dangerous.
Anything else in Harford County that's venomous? Because sometimes people see that like a diamond-shaped head and they freak
sure.
out of a snake. But
nope, that's all we have. There were rattlesnakes here many years ago. I'm talking like 100 years ago.
Really?
There were rattlesnakes found throughout the state at that point. But they've since been extirpated, aka removed from their environment. You can no longer find rattlesnakes in this part of Maryland anymore. You'd have to go all the way out to Frederick County or further west into the Appalachian Mountains to find rattlesnakes. So the copperhead is the only venomous snake we have here.
And where can it be found?
So they can be found throughout the county, but they have certain habitats they prefer. So they tend to not be around people very much. So you're going to find them in more secluded places like our state parks. They like to live near streams and other sources of water. So, but they're habitat generalists. So they live in a variety of different places. But again, they tend to avoid people.
And you can't always blame them because, you know, people, we have a tendency to get rid of wildlife's habitats,
sure. You know,
to make room for ourselves,
right?
Which is a little selfish, you know, maybe a lot selfish.
Sure. I mean, it's a hard thing to talk about, too, because inevitably you're going to come across wildlife when you're developing an area. And it's really and humans have to develop, you know,
sure.
to a certain extent. So really the message we want to send home is more of a how to get along.
Right.
And how we can share our area that we have to. So it's good for people and good for wildlife alike.
Andy, tell me, how can they get involved with the Susquehanna wildlife?
The first step is to come talk to me. Well, we also are very, very active on social media, and we have a website as well, so you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. You can go to our website or reach out to me here if you're a student here at HCC. Feel free to stop by my office in the Aberdeen building, and I'll talk Susquehannock wildlife all day. And we can get and talk about your interests and your what you want to do with your degree and everything, and we can hopefully get you set up with an internship or at least a volunteer opportunity to get you some experience.
Right, because that's what college is all about, man.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll tell you what's up at the Owl's Nest. Andy Adams, Assistant Professor of Biology and Environmental Science and the President of Susquehannock Wildlife. Got a lot going on in the biology department here at HCC. Come talk to Andy Adams. He's one heck of a guy. Andy, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
We'll have you back again.
All right, great.
We'd like to give one final thank you to all of our guests here on What's Up at the Owl's Nest this week. Julie Mancini, coordinator for the Hayes High House, and Andy Adams, biology department professor here at Hartford Community College. Can't wait until next week to see who we have here on the Owl's Nest. Until next time, let curiosity